There's a lot of things in this old world that just do not make sense. Like why there's so few believers on the firing line, while so many others sit the fence. But if you want to know where the Word of God stands, and believe it wants to use your feet and hands, it's time to take your faith out of the seats and into the streets, and come along with me. If you'll only look, then you will see on WCN TV.
Welcome to today's WCN TV program. We are broadcasting live, and this is Tuesday, May 28th, 2024. Well, it's been a busy time here in Lake Wobegon. The new edition of Wisconsin Christian News is out now and distributed all across the country. My delivery routes here in Wisconsin alone require me to make 5 trips back to the loading dock at the printing plant, picking up loads of newspapers and to stock news racks and get them to our distribution volunteers. So anyway, I try not to overload my van, but as the number of copies we print continues to increase every month, that's getting harder to do. Recently, I guess I really overdid it because I blew out the suspension in the van and just had to replace shock struts and springs, which if you've ever done that, you know it ain't cheap. So I just got here. I just ran in the door from picking up the van from the shop. So that's why I'm late. Anyway, those 5 trips to the printing plant may end up increasing to 6. We'll see. Meanwhile, I've had no shortage of work here. Catching up in the office, I've been researching, writing, recording new radio commentaries, and lining up guests for our WCN TV program, plus planning for our Natural Family Festival coming up here in June. So there's a lot going on all the time. But I'm excited about today's guest. I've been waiting for a long time. Dr. Sherry Tenpenny is with us, waiting in the wings, and you're in for a great program. So right now, before we bring her in, take a minute and invite someone to watch the show with you. Share the link to WCNTV.net or our Rumble page, if you will. And if you don't share it now, please at least do it later after the show. And if you're watching on Rumble, take 1 second, click that thumbs up. That really helps us out. If you're like most, you probably never heard of Dr. Tenpenny until the COVID years hit. She became one of the most outspoken doctors and scientists questioning the COVID protocols, the jabs, and the official hospital treatments. And for her hard work and truth-telling, she had her medical license suspended, and the medical board in Ohio even ordered her to have a psychiatric evaluation, if you can believe that. She's an osteopathic medical doctor, board-certified in osteopathic medicine, with a proficiency certification in integrative medicine. She was previously board certified in emergency medicine when she worked as a full-time emergency medicine physician and served as director of a level 2 trauma center for 12 years. Over the last 25 years, she's invested tens of thousands of hours of research on the problems associated with vaccines, all vaccines. And she's also the founder of Tenpenny Integrative Medical Center near Cleveland, Ohio, providing natural holistic approaches to health and wellness. Her clinic success has attracted patients from all 50 states and more than 20 countries. Still, I guess I didn't I guess she didn't have enough to do because she also writes regular articles on two Substacks and has recently released a delightful new book entitled Walking with God. Dr. Penny, Tenpenny, welcome to WCN-TV. Sorry I'm so late on the program and a little bit flabbergasted here as I ran in the door, but I'm here. And thank you for sending me the book. It is a delightful book. It's wonderful. And it's sitting in my office, and I'm in the studio, so I can't show it to the people, but there it is on the screen. If, Jonathan, you can show that to the folks. There you go. Great devotional book. And we will get into that shortly. So, Dr. Sherry, I hope you will take this next statement in the spirit in which it's meant, but you are not a normal doctor, are you?
Well, I guess, thank you so much for having me on your show, Rob. And I guess normal is, it depends on how you define it.
Well, by that, I mean, you know, people don't come to see you when they're sick, talk to you for 2 minutes. You go into the little room next door and get on Google and look up the symptoms and then write them a prescription for a drug. I don't mean to discredit all doctors, but isn't that what most of them really actually do?
Well, I'm not sure about going into the next room and looking it up on Google, but I do
sometimes know that, they do it in the same room.
I do know that sometimes the office visits are quite short. They've published a lot about the fact that most diagnoses are made within the first 8 minutes of the conversation. And that means that they've determined what was wrong and what they're going to do within the first 8 minutes. And if the visit goes longer than that, if it goes 15 or 20 minutes, it really has nothing to do with changing the mind of the physician, that perhaps there are more things going on than what just met the eye.
Yes, and I learned years ago that you don't ask questions because every question you ask, no matter how innocent, raises you up to another level of care, which increases your bill tremendously. So thankfully, I've got a good doctor now, but that's when I was in the medical system. That's how things work. Every question you asked made it, you know, from a level one to a level two to a, you know,
It's infinite
number of levels.
It's not infinite. There are five levels of coding, and they are levels of complexity. So I'm guessing that when you say that, you know, if you ask other questions, that adds a level of complexity, which means the billing for the time allotted gets higher, which means the physician gets better reimbursement. And so it's the whole system is completely broken, Rob. I mean, it's just completely broken. And thankfully, with my clinic that I've had here in Cleveland since 1996, you know, my doctors and physicians assistants and nurses that work there don't practice that kind of medicine. And we're always happy to spend as much time as needed with patients to figure out what's going on with them and create a plan to hopefully lead them back to being well.
Well, you know, I think one of the good things that may have come from the COVID years was that a lot of doctors are actually changing their ways. And unfortunately, to do that, a lot of them have to leave the big medical complexes and open their own clinics. My current doctor did that. And I know that you've done that as well. So.
Yeah, I did that many, many years ago when I realized that I was standing in the ER, was still working in the ER full time, as you had mentioned, and I was realizing I was spending more time looking at the clock, wondering when my shift was ended, than I was in spending time enjoying any of the things or trying to help the people that I was doing. And it was like it was just time to leave. And so, you know, I opened a small clinic where I did osteopathic manipulation 3 days a week. It was sort of a transition out. I did that 3 days a week. I still worked in the ER every other day, every on Tuesday and Thursday, and every other weekend. I was still director of the clinic of the ER, and I was president of our ER group. And I did that for 2 years, and then I moved to Cleveland, and I commuted back and forth for a couple of years until my clinic here in Cleveland was strong enough that I could give up that income and just hop over and do this full time. And that was 1998 was my last full-time shift in the ER. So we've been doing this for a long time.
You have been ahead of the curve on most things. But let's go back in time just a little bit and tell us how you came to learn about natural health and healing versus big the big pharma solution to everything. How did that happen for you?
I think it started in probably 1994 when my business partner in my ER practice in our ER group, his name was Dave Fronsack, who I dearly loved. I contracted metastatic kidney cancer at the age of 32 and died within about 8 months. And at that point, I knew there had to be something more than just passing out pills in the ER, because there had to be some better way to do things. And that was about the same time that the Eisenberg study came out. And the Eisenberg study reported that there, at that point in time, which was about 1993, that Americans were spending more than $1 billion in 1993 dollars, more than $1 billion a year in natural sorts of things, such as chiropractic and vitamins and acupuncture and seeing Chinese medicine physicians, and they were not telling their patients. And I distinctly remember there was this like chill that ran through the entire hospital. It was like, what? They're seeing somebody else and they're not telling me? And they're seeing those hocus pocus doctors. And I thought, man, they got everybody there so upset. I thought I needed to check into it. And so I did. And I found that, and I said to myself, this is the direction that medicine is going to go. So as being director of the ER, I made out the schedule and we made it out 2 months in advance. And I subscribed to a journal called the Townsend Letter for Doctors and Patients. And it came every month. And at the beginning of the month, there was a table in the last two pages of the journal that said, that listed all of the seminars and training classes that were going on around the country. And so since I was making out the schedule for the ER, I started making out the schedule based around which weekends I wanted to be gone to these conferences. And so for 2 years, I did every other week. For 2 years, at least once a month, I was going to a seminar to learn about health and natural healing. I signed up for courses at the time I didn't know anything about, and I didn't even know how to pronounce. And so I spent 2 years like self-learning and reading the Townsend Letter and buying textbooks on nutrition. And what really told me that I didn't know anything about nutrition, because we got no training in medical school, was the day that I, in my little clinic where I was doing osteopathic manipulation and acupuncture, a patient came in and said, can you help me pick out the best multivitamin to take? And I said, yeah, that shouldn't be any problem. I'll get back to you next week. So during that week, I went over to GNC and I walked into GNC and I looked at all this product sitting on the shelf. I had no idea in the world what they were, what they did, what they were for. And I thought, you know, there's a whole industry. These are franchises. There's a whole industry out there about nutrition and supplements. They must do something. So I should investigate this. And that's when I started to take more classes on nutrition and supplements. And it just took a couple of years until I found a mentor at one of the seminars that I went to. And he kind of took me by the hand and trained me and took a lot of the stuff that I sort of knew and expanded it. And that was from around 1994, 1995. And it just took a while. Now they've got whole courses. They've got the Institute for Functional Medicine. They've got the American Academy of Anti-Aging Medicine. They've got entire structured courses to teach people how to, all the things we should have learned in medical school that we didn't. And they've got entire, you know, 2 or 3 year programs to take people back and train them to be the type of physician they should have been in the first place.
Well, as I understand it, people have been fighting for health freedom for decades, and even trying to shut down alternative health resources. So I began studying natural healing when I was a kid. I guess I was a weird kid, but I did. Somebody gave me the book by Jethro Kloss called Back to Eden. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but very fascinating, filled with excellent information. He was a natural I guess you'd call him a naturopathic doctor from the 1800s, and originally from Wisconsin, by the way. But check into it. Back to Eden by Jethro Kloss. I still highly recommend it. Still in print. But so you worked in a lot of areas of medicine before you started to become aware of the dangers of drugs and vaccines. Tell us when and how the light came on for you about those things.
Well, I kind of already laid it out about how I started to know about natural things, except, you know, I grew up in a chiropractic family. My grandfather and my father and three uncles and two cousins were chiropractors, and that's why I opted to be an osteopathic physician, because I wanted that tool of being able to do manual medicine. I wanted that tool in my toolbox. And so I grew up on Shaklee vitamins, and, you know, my dad used to have a big bottle of chewable vitamin C, either lemon or cherry flavored, in his office. And for all the kids that came in and got an adjustment and didn't cry, he would give them candy. And the candy was a chewable vitamin C or vitamin, or a chewable vitamin C tablet. And so I grew up with that. I was never vaccinated as a child. I had all the age-appropriate infections like measles, mumps, rubella, chickenpox. I missed most of the third grade because of all those things. And they wanted to hold me back a year. And my dad went to the school board and said, look, you've been trying to move her ahead ever since she started school. I think she'll be just fine. And so, you know, I kind of grew up in a natural type of family, even though I didn't, you know, take that on to study it. I always wanted to be a medical doctor. I wanted to be, you know, Marianna Welby, MD. You know, when we grew up, there was Marcus Welby, MD, and you know, Chad Everett, the medical center, and those types of television programmings. And it was something that I always wanted to do, always wanted to do. And then I went to medical school and went into doing emergency medicine. And I was always pretty good at doing osteopathy, doing manual medicine. And so I would treat the nurses and the other doctors that would sneak down to see me. And so, you know, when I opened my first center to just do osteopathic manipulation and got into nutrition, as I described, it wasn't until I moved to Cleveland, Ohio in 1996 that I had an opportunity to go to the National Vaccine Information Center in Washington, D.C. in September of 2000 to go to a seminar on vaccines. And I'd had a lot of patients that had come into the office and sort of clutched their young child to their chest and said, what is your position on vaccines? And I said, I don't know that much about it. They didn't teach us anything about it in medical school. I wasn't vaccinated as a kid. I don't know what people are so afraid of. And so when I had an opportunity to go to that seminar, I thought, well, maybe I should go down and hear what they have to say. And after 3.5 days of listening to doctors and lawyers and bench scientists, parents of vaccine-injured children, I came home and I thought, I really missed this. How did this miss my educational platform? Well, maybe I need to look into this. So I started, it was in September of 2000, I read the 1998 version of the general recommendations of vaccination from the CDC, which was really poorly written. And, you know, every reference was the CDC. That would be like me writing a paper and every reference would be a paper written by Sherry Tenpenny. And so I just thought it was really poorly done and there had to be more to it than this, which then turned into a life vocation that I've literally spent tens of thousands of hours over the last almost 24 years now looking at vaccines and saying that none of them are safe, none of them keep you from getting sick, none of them are necessary, and they all can cause harm. So when the COVID vaccine came out, it was just a natural extension for me to roll over into that arena and say, what is going on here? And that's how the transition came about and why it was very easy for me to just pick up the mantle and move forward with the COVID shots, because I had been studying problems with vaccines for 20 years by that time.
And what problems were you seeing with the, I guess you'd call it the traditional vaccines?
Well, they all in one way or another can cause asthma, allergies, eczema, ADD, ADHD, insulin-dependent diabetes, various forms of cancer, neurological problems like tics and seizures, and yes, autism. And so you could see any combination of them. At one point, when I first started investigating problems with vaccines, it was an $8 billion industry. And now it's over a $60 billion industry, not including the COVID shots. And kids now, for the longest time, were getting 72 doses of vaccines if they were fully vaccinated between the ages of 0 and 18. And now they just updated the vaccination schedule and added more vaccines to it, added more antigens in the last year. And now if a child is fully vaccinated from birth until age 18, they get somewhere between 105 and 107 injections. And if you are injecting that much poison, milligram amounts of aluminum, still, some of the vaccines still have mercury, they have polysorbate 80, they have formaldehyde in them, they have all kinds of cow blood and chicken parts and dog kidney cells. And when you're injecting that kind of foreign matter into children, how can you possibly think for one half of a second that that's doing anything in the world to improve their health?
And are parents doing this with informed consent?
Usually not. In fact, when you mentioned in the intro that the state medical board had come after my medical license, and that's kind of a long story, but at the end of it, I had to answer a series of interrogatories and had them notarized and sent them back in. And they asked a series of 33 what I call pretty silly questions. And one of the questions was, have you lost clients or patients because of your position on vaccines? And I said, quite to the contrary, we've gained lots and lots of patients because patients like to go to a doctor that gives them fully informed consent, that tells them what's coming through the vaccine, what the risk of the vaccine is versus the risk of the infection, what you can do for the infection if your child gets ill, and then gives you the option of getting the shot or not. And one of the questions was, well, would you give anyone in your office a vaccine? And I answered, no, there are plenty of places where people can go to get injected. They can go to a doctor's office, a pediatrician's office, even the public health department. They can get injected if they want, but they're not going to be injected if they're in my office.
Then go to the local pharmacy and do it now.
Well, that's true too. Yep.
Well, you know, when I was a kid, they gave us our vaccines in school, and everybody was taken to the gym. Nurses came in, everyone got their round of shots, but of course, they couldn't do everyone at once, so they had to have something for us to do. And I didn't realize it at the time, but now looking back, I find this interesting. Instead of all the gym equipment being out, basketballs, things like that, you know, for kids to play with, they set up a series of balance beams, and we were supposed to walk back and forth on these. Knowing what I know now, I just have to wonder if they were observing us back then, seeing how we handled the balance beam before our shots and then noting any changes after our shots, because there were some kids who could walk it just fine before, but once they got their shots, suddenly they couldn't balance anymore. So that just came up in my memory today as I was making notes for the show.
That could be, and it's very, very possible because of the ingredients. There's over 70 different chemicals inside of these vaccines. Now, that doesn't mean that any one particular injection has 70 chemicals, but if you get the whole litany of hepatitis A, hepatitis B, DPT, MMR, and on, you're going to get doses of chemicals, and many of those chemicals are neurotoxic. The other thing is that up through 1985, there were only three vaccines. There were only MMR, which is measles, mumps, and rubella, DPT, diphtheria, tetanus, and pertussis, and the polio vaccine, which had three different strains of polio virus in them. So up through 1985, there were only three vaccines. The ramp up in the schedule didn't begin until 1991, when they added hepatitis B to the schedule, and then shortly thereafter added the Hib vaccine to the schedule. And after the 1986 Injury Compensation Act was passed, the National Vaccine Childhood Injury Compensation Act was passed into law in 1986 by Reagan and signed into law. At that point, it gave the pharmaceutical industry complete liability protection. It set up what was called the VAERS system, the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, and it set up a what they call, it's a federal court of claims that they call vaccine court, to so that if people had an injury, they were to be able to file to get a claim against getting an injury from getting one of the vaccines. But the pharmaceutical industry was completely off the hook. It was funded by parents who paid a tax on each vaccine that they gave their children. It was supposed to be non-litigious, but it became extremely litigious. And the attorneys were supposed to just sort of sign off on it. Instead, the Department of Justice would put their young attorneys in there and make the people prove that the vaccine caused the problem, which was never the intent of the law. And when the pharmaceutical industry became completely liability protected in 1986 from that act, it was like, you know, open door, open season on kids, and to make as many vaccines as they could, because they didn't even have to do it in a safe way. Even though part of the original law said that every 2 years they were supposed to report back to Congress on the steps they were taking to make the vaccine safer and report any injuries that they were having, they've never once done it since 1986. They've never had that follow-up. And the people who were in charge of the VAERS, the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, is the FDA, and that's a little bit like having the fox rule over the hen house. And since the very beginning, we know that only about 10% of vaccine injuries are actually even reported. And so it's a messy, horrible system that's been around since 1986. And a lot of people have been injured and have never been compensated. The actual compensation for the COVID injuries hasn't been funded. It was never funded when it was set up. There have been 1.6 million VAERS reports that have been filed with over the COVID shots. And I've heard, this is just, you know, secondhand information, that there are several million more vaccine injuries that have been filed with the VAERS system that have not yet been added into the database for people to research what's going on with the COVID jabs. So the entire system is set up to protect the pharmaceutical industry, to create customers for life out of children, because if you're injecting them with all of these toxic chemicals, how can you in any way think it's doing anything good for their health? And when in life would you ever be subjected or exposed to all those different pathogens at the same time anyways? So it's a horrible system. I've spent basically dedicated my life to studying it and exposing it to people. And I think now, since the COVID jab, since most people have come to the conclusion that COVID was pretty much a fraud and that they were coerced by one way or another into getting these shots, many people have died. The all-cause mortality is through the roof. Infertility in every country around the world is dropping like a rock. And people are now seeing it and they're connecting the dots. And I think that now people are saying, well, if that's the case with the COVID jab, what about all these other shots they want to inject into me and my children? And for the first time since I've been doing this, there has been a resurgence, a big resurgence in people saying, what's coming through that needle? And is it really necessary for my child?
And that's a good thing, because most parents don't ask. They don't bother to ask. They just accept the safe and effective
mantra.
And I guess the mandates from schools, because, you know, in order to go to school, I guess most of them require you to have your shots.
And see, that's one of the things that parents don't know, is that every state except for two have exemptions. I mean, West Virginia and California no longer have medical, religious, or philosophical exemptions. There are still 14 states in the country that have what's called a personal choice exemption, or that if they can just write a simple letter to the school board and say, I'm choosing to not vaccinate my child. If there's an outbreak, I'll keep them home. You don't need a doctor to do that. You don't need to have it notarized. You just can write it yourself. Now, I'll say that with a caveat. Well, let me finish my thought here. So there's two states that don't have any exemptions, and 14 states that have a philosophical exemption, and the rest of the states have a religious exemption. Then some of those religious exemptions are more difficult to get than others. But they basically say, my body was given to me by God. I am a holy and whole protected body. my immune system is fully intact, and I am not going to be injected with cow blood, chicken parts, and all those things to contaminate the temple of the Holy Spirit. And you have to, once you make that declarative statement about your religious exemption, you can't pick and choose what vaccines you want to give your kids. You can't claim that you have a religious exemption so you don't get the Gardasil, but then still get a flu shot, because that will invalidate your exemption. But the parents all think that they have to get vaccines to go to school, and they don't. It's can for some states, it can be a real fight, but in most states, it's a little bit easier now than what it's ever been because of the COVID disaster.
Yeah, well, they certainly were not allowing exemptions in many places on the COVID jabs.
Well, that's true, but I'll tell you, the exemptions have been around for as long as the states have been around. They were actually filed in the 1800s when most states were founded. This is not new law. In fact, it's old law, and it's only written for K through 12. It really doesn't apply to colleges. And so it's on based on colleges, it's based on a kind of a state-by-state ruling and sort of a college by college decision what they're going to do. In fact, in about 2007 or 2008, I was looking across the landscape and I said, you know what? They're going to put the next big hurdle to get over is going to be vaccinating to get into college, because we've got all these thousands and thousands, if not millions, of parents that are fighting to keep their kids unvaccinated in K through 12. They've written their exemptions every year because some schools require it yearly. Some schools require it for kindergarten through, you know, for grade school, and then again for middle school and then high school. Some schools require both parents' signatures. Some schools require for it to be notarized. But schools all have to follow the state laws. And I thought, you know, there's going to be all these parents that have fought all these years to keep their kids unvaccinated. And then the next big barrier to entry is you have to be vaccinated with all of these vaccines to get into college. And I was right. And I tried very hard at the time to get everybody to like roll up their sleeves and get into action about that. And I couldn't, you know, it's like the thing with most Americans, you know, it's like when there's a tornado warning that's going off, that there's a tornado in your community, instead of running to the basement and taking shelter, most people these days pick up their phone and go out and they want to record it and put it on their Instagram account. And so it was, you know, unless it's literally tearing down your house, people don't pay attention. And people right. didn't pay attention with these warnings about colleges. But now people are standing up more firmly since the COVID shots, which is a good thing.
Well, thanks to doctors like you and others, people are waking up to some of this stuff. You know, we're told that vaccines take years to research and develop. But was Operation Warp Speed not fishy in itself? And then the governments of the world were certainly adamant about everyone getting jabbed. They started by offering incentives like lotteries, free food, free beer, even college scholarships, free donuts. Yeah. I think they had a lottery in Ohio, didn't they?
They did. They had a lottery for 4 years paid scholarship to go to one of the major universities here. They did.
Yeah. And then when too many people were still hesitant to take them, Biden decided no more Mr. Nice Guy, and then he threatened to fine companies with 100 more employees, which ended up not working well for him. But through that, many people lost their jobs. It was get the jab or lose your job. Religious exemptions were not allowed at many places, including and especially the military and hospitals.
It's true.
So you had to, I mean, you had to suspect that something was up. All we heard was safe and effective, and yet there was nothing to point to that. In fact, regarding informed consent, as I understand it, the package inserts were blank.
That's correct. They were. And many still remain blank.
So, then Pfizer wanted 75 years to release their information on them.
That's right. But now thankfully, there was a smart judge that saw through that nonsense.
Yeah, 75 years, they'll all be dead one way or the other.
And no liability, no accountability. All the people that took the jabs will be dead, and all the people that ordered them to be taken will be dead, and life will just go on. And fortunately, there was a smart judge that saw through that and didn't allow that.
Well, unfortunately, people are still getting boosters. Believe it or not, it's still happening.
I know. I read a report recently. This was probably a few months ago now I heard the CDC, the current CDC directors, proudly and perkily sort of say, "Yes, we're developing our next round of COVID shots that for the 10th boosters." And I just, my eyes just popped open when I was watching that. And then I read somewhere that people were, that only 23% were willing to take the extended boosters. And I just shook my head and I thought, what is wrong with that 23%? Are they living underneath a rock? Do they not have any idea of all the literally several thousand publications that have now come out about the problems caused by the shots, the neurological complications, the myocarditis, the psychological things that have happening, the sudden deaths, the all-cause mortality, all the things that Ed Dowd has written about in his books, if people don't understand that now, I mean, it's kind of like, I guess, you know, Rob, most of my life, I would say in the last, probably the last 15 years that I've done vaccine education, I've always considered myself a sower of seeds. And I follow the parable of the sower in the Bible by just throwing seeds out there. And for the listeners who don't know that, the sower sows seeds, and some seeds fall on rocky soil and they get, the birds come along and pick them up and they go away. Some seeds fall into good soil, but they get choked out by the weeds. Some seeds fall into better, okay soil, but it gets scorched out by the sun. But one in four seeds, 25% of your effort, is going to fall into good soil and grow up and bear fruit 30, 60 to 100 times. And so when I hear that still 23% are willing to take these COVID jabs that do nothing but harm you, they ruin your immune system, they have all kinds of long lists of inflammatory problems, it just goes on and on and on. I think of them as the rocky soil, that no matter what you tell them, no matter what you show them, no matter how many times that you show them all-cause mortality stats or whatever you show them, or sudden deaths, they're never going to get it. They're just the rocky soil. And I also want to say that to encourage people to say that, you know, one in four seeds is going to fall on good soil. So that's 25% of your effort. So don't get frustrated when you say, "I've told them a million times and they still get the jabs." You know, you never know where the good soil is. You never know which seed they're going to listen to. And it might be the person standing behind you, you don't even know, is eavesdropping on your conversation. Maybe the most important person that is hearing you say the things that you're saying. So continuing to sow seeds is really important. And don't get discouraged because you don't know which seed, you don't know where the good soil is, and it's completely out of your hands to how long it's going to be for that seed to take root and sprout.
Yeah, it's just frustrating when people that you know and love just won't listen to any semblance of reason.
Yeah, and what I say to people about that is, like, they're the rocky soil. And you can keep praying for them. Keep praying that the Lord will till their rocky soil and break up the rocks, the rocky hard soil. Just like if you think about a desert being hard and solid, keep praying for them that they will develop ears to hear and eyes to see, and that their rocky soil will be tilled until they can let the seeds that you're trying to sow to them in there. That's the best you can do, and probably the most important thing you can do, because you may not be able to change their mind, but certainly the Holy Spirit can.
Yeah. So I could elaborate on that with a personal note, but I won't, because that wouldn't be very nice.
Okay.
But tell us what happened in the medical industrial complex during COVID. It seemed like everything changed drastically during that time. It probably didn't, but it seemed that way. And we were lied every step of the way. And it really disturbs me to have learned about remdesivir being the only treatment allowed in hospitals and how people had to fight in court to get their loved ones any access at all to things like ivermectin and HCQ and even normal antibiotics.
Yes. I mean, everything you said is that's just absolutely the truth. And I don't know what happened to physicians. I mean, I had a t-shirt that I was going to sell in our store and my staff wouldn't let me do it. And it was a series of tombstones that said 12/31/20, death of common sense. Another one said death of literacy. Another one said death of caring for people, because they just really treated people like they were horrible. And I just watched a video last night that's being put together by survivors of COVID and by survivors of people who passed with COVID while they were in the hospital, telling their horrifying stories about how when someone went into the hospital, they were treated like a prisoner and a prisoner of war. In fact, one of the people said, "I don't know what it's like to be a real actual prisoner of war, but I can't imagine it was much worse than what the doctors and nurses put us through." And the nurses said things like, "I wish all these people that haven't gotten the jab would just go out on the street and die. And they wouldn't hear anything about ivermectin or hydroxychloroquine. They wouldn't hear anything about budesonide or oxygen or vitamin D or zinc or anything. It was just remdesivir and being on a ventilator. And that's all we can do. And that's what we're going to do. And if you don't want to do it, I guess you're just going to plain die." And the callous hardness of so many of these physicians, which goes back to what you were saying about physicians who are just saying, I can't live inside of this anymore. I've got to get out of this, no matter what it costs me. And what it's going to cost them is a big paycheck, because the amount of money that they get paid as being a staff physician on a hospital and running a clinic and billing insurance is way more than what physicians make having their own practices and having a cash-based business and doing things that really help and get people well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it was the end of 21 when, I think it was December of 21, and I got a letter from the hospital that I was, basically, my insurance required me to have every year, so I needed a primary doctor. And that's the hospital that I was working with. So I got this letter in the mail. My doctor was retiring at the end of the year, and they wanted me to pick a different one. Well, it turned out that my doctor was one of 300 that retired from that organization that year. And there's no way he retired, because he was at the most 39, 40 years old. And but he was one of those guys that, "Did you get the shot? Nope. Do you want the shot? Nope. Okay, sounds good." So he wasn't going along with the program, and suddenly he retired, and so did 299 others all at once. It's very strange. But anyway, I can't believe how fast time is moving here. We better keep moving, because we're not going to get nearly through my notes. So the Center for Disease Creation, the CDC, and the WHO are planning for another pandemic, as you know. And although they don't yet know what that's going to be, somehow they already claim to have a vaccine for it. How does that work?
You ask me. That is
crazy. They tried monkeypox. That didn't get much traction. Now,
They tried Marburg. That didn't get much traction. Now they're recycling bird flu, they did in 2005. It was actually in 2005. I actually wrote a book at that time called Fowl Bird Flu, It's Not What You Think. I actually wrote a book in 2004 in real time talking about the nonsense of this whole bird flu sort of thing. But they're recycling it back around to lower our food supply, you know, eliminate chickens and cows and steers, that just this would just be like a cold to them. But they are making it be a horrible thing. And now they're claiming that it's jumped from cows to humans. And I just read an article just today that the UK and the US is talking about starting, or people who in high exposure industries starting to inject them with a bird flu vaccine, which means they've already got it in development.
And there's disease X hanging out there.
We're kind of thinking that this bird flu is going to be disease X.
Yeah. Well, they're definitely brewing something. They never stop. So you mentioned the food supply. Let's jump ahead in my notes to get to that. Before I do that, I should say that, you know, in almost every election cycle, politicians always fearmonger people by telling them things are so bad, our senior citizens have to choose between their drugs and food. Well, you know, our parents and grandparents never needed all these drugs, but today, many seniors are taking up to 15 different RX medications a day. Just mentioning that. And not to mention, every other ad on TV is for an antidepressant drug, and the list of side effects is astounding. Number one side effect of antidepressants is worsening depression and an increased risk of suicide. How's that working for you? So, I mean, it's laughable, except it's not, because so many people are buying into this stuff. But let's move on, talk about the food. We know they're spraying just about all our crops with glyphosate, but that's just the tip of the iceberg. People are literally being poisoned to death by the food they eat, aren't they?
It's true. It's very true. I mean, they're vaccinating our cows, chickens. You know, there's 50 approved vaccines for fish, you know, and so it's they're poisoning our food supply by what they're feeding the things that we eat. They're spraying overhead with all kinds of things that we don't know what is coming through the air. The water is poisoned. You know, unless you know where your food is coming from now and going forward in the future, it could be really a horrible thing to think that you think you're eating good and you're really not. And that's why it's really important to set some extra money aside to grow some of your own food and also to eat as organic as you possibly can. In the food supply, there are over 3,000 food additives that can be added to your foods. So anything that comes in a can, in a box, or they hand you out a window is not real food, and it's loaded with a whole bunch of food additives. And how these food additives can get added is that as they were tested singularly, like one additive at a real high concentration for a short period of time. And they would say, well, it's a GRAS ingredient, meaning it's GRAS, which stands for generally recommended as safe. But they don't do tests to look at the cumulative amount of junk of these additives, like what happens when you put all 100 of these additives together at the same time. Or they don't look at the cumulative effect of eating fast food or junk food or stuff that comes in a box that can or they hand you out the window over a period of time. So the more of these food additives that you get, the more of the vaccines that you get, more vaccines ingredients that you get, it just is making us sicker and sicker and making us customers for life to the pharmaceutical industry. You know, when you said you were talking about all the drugs that seniors are on, you know, they have trained us well, Rob. They've trained us well to think that for every symptom there is a cure, and the cure is another pill. They've trained us well in every advertisement, every television ad. They always at the end of it say, ask your doctor. You know, go and ask your doctor if this is appropriate. And they have to say that as sort of a cover their behind. But, you know, you get, you know, three drugs and then you have another symptom. Then you get a fourth drug to cover that symptom and on and on. And they've trained us well to think that every symptom we have is caused by something that requires a pharmaceutical drug to make the symptom go away. We've been trained very well to believe that symptom-free in the presence of a pharmaceutical drug or pharmaceutical drugs, plural, symptom-free in the presence of medications is considered healthy. I can't tell you how many patients I saw in my office that they would come in with, let's say their chief complaint was, say, knee pain. And they would say, other than that, I'm perfectly healthy. Except when I do their history, I find out they're on 7 pharmaceutical drugs. And so they've been trained, we've all been trained, that if you are symptom-free in the presence of all these medications, that's defined as health, and that's not defined as health.
Yeah, well, with all those medications, I find it hard to believe that people would still be symptom-free because they all come with side effects. But before we run out of time here, I'd like to get your opinion on lab-grown meat. From what I understand, this lab-grown meat is literally made from animal cancer cells replicating in a petri dish. And the resulting meat is really just a slab of a giant cyst. Is that incorrect?
I don't know the answer to that. I haven't dug into it that far, but what I do know is that the industry is planning. There's a lot of plant-based meats that are out there that are synthetically based. And what they're going to, how they're going to get away with it and hide it is they're going to call it fermented meat. And so, you know, most of us in the holistic world, we think of fermented foods as good for us, you know, like sauerkraut and different things that are fermented. They're good for us, but they're going to call this fermented food. Now, the good news is I was at a seminar and I watched a seminar on the follow-up that they had in San Francisco called Future Foods. And they were talking about this idea of synthetic meat. And I suppose the good news for the consumer is that the bottom has fallen out of their funding because they've not been able to ramp it up in the way that they want to. They've not been able to, you know, they may be able to make it taste somewhat similar to meat, but the texture is not correct. They have all kinds of problems. They're not having the funding that they want. And now we're getting states like Florida who've passed a law that says, you know, fake meats aren't allowed here in this state. So there's a lot more of a problem with it than they would like, and it's good news for the consumer.
Yep. They've tried the Teslas, and now they're not going to fall for the fake meat.
Maybe so.
My audience here will be upset with me if I don't let them ask any questions. Anyone have a question, raise your hand. Now is your chance. We're down to 8 minutes.
Well, one of the things I want to, before we start taking questions here, is I really want to talk a little bit about my book.
You know, yes, that's on the list too.
We're down to 8 minutes. We don't have much time.
Okay, let's do it.
Well, I wrote this book. I started it from my Substack I started in 21, and I started my Substack on 10pennywalkwithgod.substack.com. It's free. It comes out every Sunday, and I started it as an inspirational message to inspire people in all these dark times that they were coming. And so I'd been writing it for a while, and I had a lot of people who said, boy, it would be great if you compiled these and put these into a usable book that I could pick it up and I could read it. I don't have to thumb back through all of your Substacks to try to find the one that I was looking for. So that was kind of the way that this book has come together. And you can see it there on the screen, The Walking with God. And it's divided into 5 sections: Be Brave, Have Hope, Embrace Faith, Deepen Trust, and Practice Obedience. And I'm really proud of it because it's really a nicely done.
Oops, somehow you got muted.
It's got lots of pictures in it, and it's got, it's a nice quality of paper, and it's the kind of book that, you know, you could skim down the table of contents and where you just want an inspiration for the day, that you could go read a Bible verse, a little commentary about the Bible verse, and have a prayer. And people really like the prayers that we put together. So it's out there, and I really hope that people will. It's a usable book. It's not the kind of thing where you write a book and people go, "Oh, I can't get your book and read it." You can read it from beginning to end, and I hope that you do. And then I hope that it will lay on your counter in your kitchen or on your nightstand in your bedroom, and it'll be something that you'll use over and over again for a long time to come.
Well, it's really organized well, and like you said, there are a lot of pictures and. The pages are laid out so I gotta say beautifully, as one who lays out pages. You did a beautiful job in doing that.
Thank you.
And it's useful because it is set up, like you said, with the table of contents under topically. So people can go to whatever topic they're interested in for that day. I wish I had mine here where I could reach it and show you, but you can go to the topic and use it as a daily devotional.
And a daily devotional about when you want encouragement about hope and about faith, about trust, about being brave. I mean, I wrote some of this during COVID and I had to go back and I had to change the verbiage because now it's past tense. And at the time that I wrote it, it was present tense. And so there's a lot of encouragement in there. There's a lot of encouragement about people who've gotten COVID jabs, you know, about what they can do for their soul and their spirit about that. And so I hope that it's something that's very usable and that people will really enjoy it. There's a book too that's coming out in a couple of months that's similar. It's going to have the same cover, except it's going to be kind of a royal blue instead of like the dark green. And it's a completely different types of topics. But again, it's an inspirational, and that's what it's there for.
Couple of months. I was looking forward to that by Father's Day, actually.
Well, it's Father's Day is coming right around the corner, so I think that it may be a little bit farther out than that. It won't be quite Father's Day, but that was the original target, but I think it's going to be probably a little bit later than that. But nonetheless, when it comes out, we will put them together as a set, and people can buy one or the other or both. And so I think because the topics are very different, I think that both of them would be things that people would want to have around for a long time.
Well, folks watching, my birthday is August 21st, so
there you go.
Just keep that in mind. I'm sure we can. I'm always really hard to buy for, so put me on the list for volume two. So we're down to a few minutes. Just briefly, at your clinic in Ohio, you focus on holistic and natural healing approaches. Tell us about your clinic and what are some of the illnesses you treat there and how do you treat them?
Well, you know, my clinic is a Tenpenny Integrative Medical Center that you can find that at Tenpenny IMC as an Integrative Medical Center, TenpennyIMC.com. It's just like a family practice office, but we do appropriate workups and then we do better holistic natural types of treatments. So we treat primarily things like thyroid conditions, balance bioidentical hormones, do things with acupuncture and acupressure. We treat all kinds of allergies there, and summer's coming into some allergy seasons. We have great results. And I'm always proud to say people have come from all 50 states and about 20 foreign countries. So even though you may be in Wisconsin or Pennsylvania or Texas or wherever you are, we have seen people already from your states, and people come and spend a week or two and they go through our entire evaluation program. And then it takes a few weeks to get the results back from those evaluations. Like we do breast thermography and some of the blood testing that we do. And we do a lot of IV therapies. And then when you go home, we have a follow-up phone consult with you on the results so that, you know, in the couple of weeks period of time, we get you started on some things, and then we treat you, we can treat you by phone after that by going over your results when you get home.
Great.
And we also have a clinic where we do ECP, which is external counterpulsation, which I know we're going to run out of time, but ECP, if you go to tenpennyecp.com, you'll be able to see what that website is. It treats chest pain, shortness of breath, kidney disease, lung disease, peripheral vascular disease. It treats erectile dysfunction, all sorts of lymphatic congestion in your lower extremities. And we're having a open house to our location in Ventura, California on Friday of this week. So if anybody's in the California area, please come and join us. It's from noon to 3 Pacific time on Friday. And you can see how ECP therapy, which has been around since 1953, FDA approved in 1995, got thrown under the bus in 2010 because it was working too well and insurances decided to stop paying for it. And so we are creating a whole new wave of interest in how to get well doing natural things.
We actually do have viewers and readers in that area and in Ohio. So
awesome.
That's good. If we were to go an extra minute or two, any questions or comments? Now's your chance.
Well, I guess we were going to try to take a question or two from the audience. Do we have time for that?
We do, but I don't have anyone raising their hands.
Okay.
We have a quiet group today. Oh, Betty.
Yes. Dr. Sherry, you know, I was in the military and I was there in it for like 28 years. And I probably had over 300 shots. I believe the military was guinea pigs in some of the little health issues that I have. Is there any way I could detox my body from all of them somehow?
Well, if you've had them over all those years, and it was years ago since you've had them, probably the mainstay of things that you need to get rid of are the aluminum and mercury that were probably in those shots. I mean, many of the chemicals have been dissipated or already been incorporated into your cells. And we are a big, big fan of Pure Body Extra, spray, the zeolite spray. We're big, big fans of it. And if you go to our website, if you go to DRT Detox, DRT, like as in Dr. Tenpenny, drtdetox.com, you can get your first bottle for like $12. And it really does take out all those heavy metals, aluminums, persistent organic pollutants, and all sorts of things. I don't know how much it can help to get rid of some of the genetic changes that have happened from all those things, but it really helps to get all sorts of things detoxed out of your system.
Well, I take zeolite now, but I don't know how do you know if it's helping or not? That's the question.
Well, you probably can't afford to do before and after testing on every one of those metals, Betty. I mean, so you just have to know how the zeolite spray really helps and the different things really help to get them out of your system. And if you've got a good quality zeolite, then it is getting it out of your system. People ask me, how long do we have to keep taking these detoxification products? And I said, well, probably the rest of your life, because this world is always a very toxic place, and it's not getting any less toxic anytime soon.
Tell us that website one more time.
It's drtdetox.com. drtdetox.com.
Excuse me while I write that down.
Yeah, thank you.
So, all right. Well, we are out of time, folks. Sorry to say, I had actually another 9 pages of notes that we didn't.
Oh my gosh!
And I knew as I was doing it, I thought we're never going to get to all this. But I just I have an inquiring mind, so I had a lot of questions. But
well, if you ever want to do this again, you know, just contact Michelle, and we'll come back and start where we left off.
Okay, sounds good. Well, thank you, Dr. Tenpenny, for being here today. We will be back next week with Mark Sutherland from the UK. And until then, God bless you. We'll see you then. Bye.
Thank you. Good night.